Rebbe, you're on mute.
Okay. We left off in the previous year. The Gemara of Vasta of Gimel Ralph introduced to us a limitation in the Kinyan Chalipin. Now, just the fact that there's a limitation, Kinyan Chalipin itself is a little bit startling, because Kinyan Chalipin is really the best Kinyan on the side. You know, most other Kinyanim have certain limitations to them. Certain things you can buy kaka with, certain things you can buy metalpin with, certain things you could use to kind of shanisha. Chalipin sounds like it's unbelievable. The kayim called dovar, shalafish nala, you can buy kaka, metalpin. You can't use the kedusha, that's true. But you can use it to buy kaka, to buy metalpin. But it comes to the Gemara and says, the buck stops here, that you cannot use chalipin, what's called the kinyan dvarim. I'm going to make a kinyan with you to obligate myself to do an action. I'm not selling you land, I'm not selling you an animal, I'm not selling you a car. I'm obligating myself to split the field with you. That's what's called kinyan dvarim. Kinyan is not toe-faced. It doesn't even take effect. It's just words alone. It doesn't take effect on actions. It takes effect on chafatzim. It takes effect on real life things. So with this background, the Rishonim have answered the question at the beginning of the fifth paragraph of Maseches Ksubos. The Mishnah discusses the person is accepting upon himself to pay a lot of extra money above and beyond what it says in the actual ksuba itself. So we spoke a little bit about this on Friday. The Chazal, Torah, Chazal, depending on the Machlokes, who instituted what's called the Iker Ksuba. But now the person wants to be nice, and he's mishabed himself to the extra, what's called the Tosefes Ksuba. It's beautiful, wonderful, it has work. What mechanism do we have to mishabed yourself to pay X amount? So comes Tosis, in Maseches Ksubas, we read on Friday, but Tosis says, wait, it depends. If the fellow owns property, if the chassid owns land, so then I understand that we can make a kinyan to be mishaveh that land, because just as you can sell land with the kinyan chalipin, you can obligate land, you can put a lien on land, you can make a shib with the chassid on the land through the mechanism of a kinyan chalipin. But if the chassid doesn't own anything, so obviously there's no kinyan of shib with the chassid. There is no shib with the chassid. There aren't no chassid to speak of. You can't have a shibud when you don't have the chosim. So the only thing that the chosim can become obligated to do is what we call a shibud haguf. He has a personal obligation to go to the bank and take out money and pay X, Y, and Z to the woman after the marriage dissolves. So ask Tosfos, wait a second, a personal obligation to do an action? That's kinyan dvarim. That's exactly what Agamar says doesn't work. So when you have the chosim, I understand. When you don't have the chosim, what's going on? Says Tosfos, all these Chassadim in the Middle Ages, they weren't exactly rolling in money. Most people didn't have any money then. Most people didn't have any chassim then. So says Tosfos, and still somehow it works. So Tosfos tried to figure out what the mechanism is. How could you be mishabed yourself to something that you don't have any chassim to? Why isn't that just a regular kinyan dvarim? That Gemara says it's not. So before we come to the answer to that question, we actually have to fine-tune Tosfos' question a little bit better. Let's go back to the sixth of the Mamakamos, where Tosus presents the question. So Tosus Ksubas Nam Nadalam Abeis, Afalpi, Mrotzel Hosefil, Man Monomos, if Tema asks Tosus. The Akshav Nagu, now we have the practice, Shakosim Chosel the Kala, Mea Litrin, he obligates himself to 100 Litrin, Afalpi Shaelo Shavapruta, to check out his bank account, he has nothing, zero. So now Tosus says, oh, wait a second, not such a terrible question yet. If he has property, then I understand Shibud HaChosim kicks in. Behold, it is Chayev, if you never do Elu HaChosim, let's go back for a second to a case where the person does have property. He does own karka. So it sounds like if and when he owns karka, then there's no problem, then it's okay. Wait a second, it's okay. How is it so okay? Even if he owns karka, he owns karka now. Who says in 50 years from now, this is going to be the karka that he's going to own? It could be he'll get rid of this karka later. He'll buy new karka afterwards. And now we're going to try to figure out where in the world is this woman going to go collect the chov from? So the assumption is she's going to go and get the property that he owns now. Yes, Tosfos, how did that happen? The property that he bought after the ksuba was written, he bought property 50 years later. How is that property with Shubud to her? It must be that it's because he has a personal lien, he has a personal obligation to pay her. Says Tosfos, well, wait a second, we just got finished saying personal obligations don't mean anything. Personal obligations are kinyan dvarim. So first Tosfos started out by saying, the reality on the ground is these chassanim have nothing. So we really, really have a problem. And then Tosa said that even in Tumtulomar, that the chassanim do have something, we still have a problem. Because the something that they have, Lav Dafka is going to be the something that's going to be collected. So even though the chassid may, at the ripe old age of 18, he has a couple of little pieces, little investments here and there. But he's going to get very, very wealthy in the next 50 years. And she's going to come running 50 years later after those nechassim. Those nechassim weren't around at the time of the quote-unquote loan, at the time of the marriage. And that runs into a problem of ein adam makne davar shelo bali olam. I can't sell what I don't own. Well, presumably the corollary of that statement is I can't obligate, I can't put a lien on something that I don't yet own. So Tosus started off with the real problem with bothering Tosus is these chassadim have nothing. That's a huge problem. And Tosus thought the chassadim have a little bit, nishkefelach. Then Tosus says, no, Tosus makes it about face and says, even the chassadim have a little bit, we have a problem. Because einoda makne slash einoda mishabe dova shalom bali olam. So that's a Tosus almost two-fold question. Oh, but the problem is that small amount may not even be enough, and Lav Dafka, that problem is going to be around, and who knows, we're going to get it. What's going to probably happen is that she's going to come to Bayes in 50 years from now and go collect from the property that he owns right now. So Tosfos says, how does that happen? So before we get to the main question of our sugya, which we're probably not going to get to today, the main question is what happened to Kiryat Devarim? Let's just make sure we have all our facts right, the way Tosfos presented. Tosfos just presented the kasha with the assumption, hey, wait a second, you can't be mishabed something that doesn't exist.
When
it comes to a mortgage, you're being shopping the house itself. So I own the house, I buy the house, and I take a $1 million loan from the bank. So that's in Ochanami. If I don't pay back my mortgage, the bank's going to take the house. That's Meshavit other Mashiach loan. What we're talking about is I borrow $1,000 from you, and then 6 months later, I buy some property. And now, when I default on the loan, am I going to collect that property? So wait a second. Ain't on the machadosh of the yolam. How was I mocked that sheep of the chas with you in the first place?
So, well, it's really unsecured, right? The suit was unsecured. You don't need a house to order to.
Okay, but that's the basic question Tosfos is asking. How does this mechanics work? L'chora, there's a din called Ain't on the machadosh of the yolam. I mean, that's not l'chora. That's for sure. There's a din of Ain't on the machadosh. I can't sell, but I don't own. So the question is, how can I be mishabit something that I don't know? The answer to the question is going to work, but we still haven't figured out the technicalities how it does so. So again, so Tosfos had a two-pronged question. That number one, the basic question is, the reality question was, these guys have nothing. So it's a elchakin in dvar b'gol b'zeh. Even if they have something, it's still not going to work, because how in the world is the shibud chasim going to work? So Tosfos makes reference to a sugya on the second of the Maamar Kavos. It's a gemara towards the very end of Baba Basra. So Tzadav and Kufnun Zayin and Babasra, second of the Maamar Kavos. I guess we can feel we lived 154 blocks this morning. We get from Avgil to Kufnun Zayin. We skipped a little in the middle. So come to the second of the Maamar Kavos, Tzadav. So we looked at a Mishnah at the end of Babasra. Ma'avas Chaver Bishtar, Golvim and Chosim Mishubadim. If I lend you money with a shtar, with a document, then I have a right to collect from the Chosim Mishubadim, which means, let's say at the time that I lent you the money, so you had 10 fields, and then you subsequently sold those fields. I want to go collect from those nechassim, even though those nechassim don't belong to you anymore. It's perfectly okay. Go them in nechassim mishubad. I have the right, I have the ability to go to Beis Din and say, listen, the guy's not paying me back the loan. I'm going after the fields that he set up as nechassim mishubadim, 6 months before. So the mission says that's perfectly okay. I the aidim go for nechassim nechaurim. But if the loan was not done with the document, even though we know that I lent him money, we have Adrian witnesses to testify to that, but there was no shtar. So then I don't have a right to take from the chosim that was subsequently sold. I can only go after the property that belongs to the lover himself. Why is this distinction? So the Gemara at the end of my master explains that fundamentally there's really no difference. It doesn't really make a difference whether the loan was done with the document or without a document, but there's a technical problem. The technical problem is it's not fair to the people who bought the land. When I buy property from you, how in the world am I going to know whether this property is mishubad to somebody else? So the only way for me to know this is like a title search today. The only way for me to know this is to start asking around, to check out with Beis Din, start asking people in town. Does anybody know, are these nechassim mishubad or not? So the assumption of Chazal is that if there was a shtar that was done, that means there was a sofer called in, the witnesses signed in, the beis din, it was registered, beis din, everyone's in top of it. I mean, you're living in a town with 15 people, so that was like the top story in the news today, that somebody actually sold a piece of land with a document, somebody borrowed money with a document. So you're dealing with a situation where there's a shtar, so the word spreads. Now the word spreads, buyer beware. Why did you buy land that you could have easily determined was meshuva to somebody else? So we're not going to help you out. We're not going to do a taiva for you. If it was a milveh ba'al peh, it was the hush hush in the middle of the night, Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon, nobody knows about it. The two Aidim aren't talking. So there's no document, there's no basin, there's no excitement, there's no sofa, people aren't, there's not the buzz in town. So now we're very, very nervous to go ahead and collect from the chas m'shubadim. No one's going to want to buy land anymore, because every time I buy land, 6 months later, the Baal is going to come take the land away from me. That's going to interfere with the market. So therefore, the Chazal instituted that although conceptually there really is no difference between the Milveh Baal Peh and Milveh Shtar, practically speaking, with the Rabbanim, we have to differentiate between the two. So that's what the Mishnah tells us, that a Milveh Baal Shtar, there is a principle of Shibud Nechosim, and you can collect from the property that was subsequently sold, whereas if it's a Milveh Baal Peh, you cannot. So boy Shmuel, based on that mission, Shmuel raised the following question. The Igne Vekana Mahu. You have to keep the timeline properly. I borrow $1,000 from you on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And with a shtar, so we could potentially have a Shibud Nechasim. And now I the Lova buy property on Hay Nisan. I didn't even own this property at the time when I took out the loan. And then I subsequently sell it on Yud Nisan. And now you come to collect the chol. You have to pay for your matzahs now. So it's after Pesach. So now you want to come collect from me. And you notice, I don't have anything. I don't have any property. So you want to go after the nechosim that I sold. Wait a second. The nechosim that I sold, I didn't even own at the time of the whole law. Can I create a shibud on something that doesn't exist yet? That's really the shah of the Gemara. Can you be mishabit property that you don't yet own? That'd be a big enough kavim ladina. Because the answer to that question is yes. So then 6 months from now, you, the Malva, are going to have the ability to go collect from something that I subsequently sold because it was mishubud. Whereas if you hold that, no, there's no such shibud, you can't be mishabit something that you don't own, then you will have no ability to go and collect that land. So that was Shmuel Shiloh. So Shmuel, fine-tunes the Shiloh a little bit by explaining Mahu. Aliba de Rabbi Meir de Yama, Adamak de Dovash Lobali Olam Loti Boilach. So it happens to be Machlekes Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanon in Maseches Kedushin. Can a person be Makne a Dovash Lobali Olam? Can I sell something that doesn't exist? Forget about being Mashabit. Literally, can I sell something I don't yet own? Can I sell something that doesn't exist? The original Machlekes Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanon was in a fascinating case. It wasn't even about Mechiras, it was about Kedushin. It was the following: that a person is Makadish and Isha, he gives a ring to a woman, but right now, the way the status is, she cannot marry him. Certain technicality here that she can't marry him. What is the technicality? So the Mishnah gives you a few technicalities. She's not Jewish, she's an Ashish Zish, he's married to her sister, a variety of different reasons why giving her the ring now will not be Makadish. So what does he say? He says, no, I don't want to marry you now, I'm going to give you the ring now, and the condition should take place after the following happens. Again, this is not the nicest thing to do. He's giving her the ring. It should be chal after you, this guy here. It should be chal after your husband dies, after your sister dies, after any of the above happens that now permits you to me, I'm giving you the condition now, and you should be kedushas to me if and when that event occurs. That's what's called a dova shelo bala olam. One can be mekadesh and isha la'achas ma'al. So for example, if a boy and a girl can get married now, but they don't want to get married this moment. They want to go through the ceremony now, but they want the condition to be chal in 6 months from now. I always give the example in Shir. I say, the couple really, really wants to get married. The parents said, not till the end of the semester. After college, you finish your finals in June, then we can get married. But they want to have a nice wedding now. No problem. So he gives her a ring now. So the Chumi says, Harem Kadeshus, le'acha that you pass your finals. After finals are open, 6 months from now in June, then the condition should be chal. So technically, that's okay. It's a good idea or a bad idea. It's another story. But technically, that condition would be valid. So there is a concept in halacha of a kedusha li'achas man. But there's a big difference. Because here, you don't have the ability to do Kaddish now. In a case where she's a bar kiddush, she's a bas kiddush, she needs a bar kiddush, the kiddush could take place now, so you can be a kaddish liyachas bar. Over here, it's a double shalom b'liyolam. The ability of kiddush doesn't exist right now. So Rabbi Meir says that's still okay. Rabbi Meir says you can still be a kaddish in isha even if shalom b'liyolam. And the Rabbanim say you can't. So comes the Gemara and says that machlekes of Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanim that started in kiddushin spills over to bechiras as well. Can I sell something I don't own? Let's say I'm going to go to the store later today and buy something. But before I buy it, I want to sell it to you. So I don't own the car yet. I'm going to buy the car tomorrow. So I'm selling you the car now, the car that I don't own yet. So Rabbi Meir says, no problem. And the Rabbanim said, what? Ain't the machna davar shel b'liyolam. So comes the Gemara in the end of Ambassador and says, that machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanon is now going to impact on Shibudim. How is that? So the Gemara continues. So by Shmuel, back to the second law of the second Rabbanon. By Shmuel, dikni v'karamal. Aliba the Rabbi Meir, the Amar Adam Makna Dava Shlomo Yoylam. According to Rabbi Meir, says even Mechiras you could sell when they don't exist. Lo Tibatlach, then it's not a Shaila. Tibat Dekanam. Of course, it works. Eliki Tibatlach Ribid the Rabbanon. The Shaila of Shmuel is following the Rabbanon. We have to pass it like the Amar Ein Adam Makna Dava Shlomo Yoylam. According to the Rabbanon, would say that Ein Adam Makna Dava Shlomo Yoylam. What would the Rabbanan say about Shibudim? Should we differentiate between a Shibud and a Kinyan? That's the Shaila of the Gemara, which is really very, very startling. Why in the world should we differentiate? The same way that I don't own it vis-a-vis selling it entirely, I don't own it vis-a-vis selling it partially. Remember, Shibud is like a quasi-Kinyan. Shibud is a certain deal, certain transaction. I'm being Bishabit, I'm being Makdib and Miktas to the Malveh. Why in the world would anybody dream that I could do that on a Dava Shalom Aliyolam? So the Rashbam, on the third of the Mamakamos, tries to explain that side, tries to understand why should that be so. So we'll take a look. Elakiti Barlach, it's the second part of the Rashbam. The third of the Mamakamos, Elakiti Barlach, Libid Rabban and Mai. Mi Shani Shibud Bekinyan, the time of Kedifrishis. He said, maybe Shibud is different than Kinyonim. There's something fundamentally different between a Shibud and a Kinyon. As I explained earlier. What did he say earlier? So I go back now to the beginning part of the Rashbam. So let's pick it up from the last line of the first paragraph of the Rashbam, the third line of that Rashbam. The Mishtabed Leikakos, the Asul Alma, Elish Adayin Lo Kanan, Lo Vebishashe Shibed. So the Rashbam in one line throws at you what the difference in a Shibud and a Kinyan is. Says the Rashbam, in other machna davar shel b'liyolam, the classic example of Dinimam, forget about conditions for a minute, the classic example of Dinimam is, I want to sell you next year's crop, the pears that are going to grow in 6 months from now. So we're going to enter into a deal, you're going to make a nice Kinyan, I'm selling you next year's fruit. I don't want to sell you the land, I'm not selling you the trees, I'm not selling you the land vis-a-vis the rights of the fruit, I'm selling you next year's crop. So comes the Gemara and says, he can do that. According to the Rabbanan, ain other makne davar shel b'liyolam. Says the Rashbam, there, the item that I'm trying to sell doesn't exist. It literally doesn't exist in the world. By Shibudim, the land's here. It just happens not to be mine yet. The land is here. The old Ramadas, the land's not going anywhere. It was here, will be always here. Says the Rashbam, that's not called the davar shel b'liyolam. Davar shel b'liyolam only means something that hasn't yet been born. It hasn't yet entered into existence. But if it's here, it's just not in my property, that's okay. That's what the Rashbam's first svar is, why Shibud should work. So that Rashbam is very, very hard to understand. The Rashash already points out this Rashbam. But by Kinyonim, that doesn't work. Let's say I want to sell you land that I haven't yet bought. I can't do that. So the same way the Gemara says that you can't sell fruit that doesn't exist, something that you don't own is like it doesn't exist. So what does Rashbam mean by saying, no, it's a tea already, it's a double havali olam. No, it's not. Davar Balyom is not measured only by is it physically here. Davar Balyom is measured by do I own it yet? Do I have the shlit? Do I have the authority right now to sell it? And the answer to the question is no. I can't sell it because it doesn't exist physically or it doesn't exist in my property. That's called a Davar Shalom Balyom. So that's the case. So what's Rashbam saying? It's a very, very, very difficult Rashbam. So the simpler answer to this problem is what the Rashbam says is answer number two. Now let's go back to the second paragraph of the Rashbam. The end of the first line, Inami. Al Muhu Rabbanim the Shibud Yosim Kinyan. Well, Tino Delas with Lovim. Says the Rashbam, you're right, Shibud is the same as a Kinyan. There is no way in pure technical halacha to be Shabbat something that you don't own. So why does the Gemara say that you can? It was a special takana sacham, Hefker Beis and Hefker, Chazal instituted it just to make sure that people wouldn't refrain from lending money. Chazal were always worried about this. Shlo Tito Dos, if they love him. That's why we have Prisbul and half dozen other takanas sachamims, because if the Malbas aren't going to lend money to Lovas, it's going to be a disaster. The Lovas aren't going to have any money, they're not going to be able to eat, they're not going to be able to invest money in business, it's going to be a terrible thing. So we want to make sure that there's always that flow of money, there's always people who are willing to lend money. So therefore, Chazal made it easier for the Malbas to collect than the Ikra didn't really should have been. And one of the things that Chazal instituted was, is that Adam Mishabed Dovash Lovali Olam. So even though you do not technically, min haTorah, have the ability to be makne nor mishabed, something that you don't own, but the Rabbanon, they let you do it. And that is the suas, what we call in halacha, the ikni, the chasim, I'm going to purchase. So if you listen carefully, next wedding you go to, under the chuppah, they actually read in the ksuba, it says, the chasim, the isli, the asid adal mikni, that the chasim obligates himself to, right now, kid's 22 years old, standing under the chuppah, you know, he probably doesn't own a house yet. Probably doesn't own all that much at this point. But the chasim, the osiyad, he's mishabing himself things that he's going to buy in the next 50 years. How does that work? That's this din. That's a special tachanas achavim that works. So the bottom line is that you can be mishabed mechasim that you don't yet own. So that puts the proper perspective of Tosus back to the Tosus, the sixth of the Mamakamas, where Tosus says, okay, if you have a chasim who owns a little bit of something, so a little bit of a shibud nechasim kicks in. So once a shibud nechasim takes root, then we could say all future nechasim are also potentially mishubud. But the problem is you can't even get into the batter's box, because if you don't own any nechasim, then you can't create a shibud. If you can't create a shibud nechasim, all you could create is a personal obligation to pay. What do I mean, a personal obligation to pay? That's what we call a kinyan devarim. So it tells us back to square one. The bottom line is, a guy standing under the chuppah, he's 18 years old, doesn't have a penny, doesn't have a property, zero, nothing, and he promises he's going to pay 100 golden coins. The Torah says, based on what is he chayav? Because he promised. We want you to be honest, but lemaisa, we can't take it to Beis Din if you're dishonest. We can take it to Beis Din if you're a gazlan. If you're taking somebody else's property, we can take it to Beis Din. But we can't take it to Beis Din if you make a promise that you don't fulfill. So promising doesn't mean anything. You made a kinyan? You made a kinyan on what? You made a kinyan to fulfill your promise? A kinyan to fulfill your promise. There's nothing a kinyan tomorrow. So we're right back where we started. So bottom line is, what's going on under this chuppah? How in the world are people shopping themselves for things that they don't own? So this question was actually presented, Tosfos quotes, by the Ri to Rabbeinu Eliyahu. Rabbeinu Eliyahu was one of the colleagues of Rabbeinu Tam. So the Ri and Rabbeinu Eliyahu overlapped. The Ri presented this question to Rabbeinu Eliyahu. So let's take a look at the sixth of the Maamar Kamos. It's six lines into the Tosfos, the middle of the line. V'shol Ri l'Rabbeinu Eliyahu. V'heishiv lo. So Rabbeinu Eliyahu responded back to the Ri, you're so worried about how can it be, that somebody can be mishabed themselves to do something without the chosim. The Batiru Kinyan Zev Rekha Serkhas Apolim. Says Rabbeinu Eliyahu, we have precedent for this in Chazal. So first Rabbeinu Eliyahu shows you what the precedent is, and then tries to explain to you how it works. The sign you learned in the Brayse of Batzia. Master Shabachinam Lios Kishoel. We can go back to the fourth of the Maamar Kamos, which is referencing that Gemara of Batzia. Tana Master Shabasach Lios Kishoel. The Mishnah, the Brayse says that, let's say, I ask you to watch something for me. I ask you to please watch my car. So according to the strict halacha, if you're watching my car, you're not getting paid. You're a shabachinam. As a shabachinam, you have very, very limited obligations. If you were pesheya, you left the keys in the car and the engine running and somebody came and stole the car, then you'd be chayef. Anything short of that, you're going to be bumped. What if I don't really like that deal? I want you to be more chayef than that. And you're a nice guy. You're willing to take up on a higher level of obligation. Nobody flaws you. You're willing to do it. So we decide between the two of us, even though you're only a shemachinam, you're going to have the responsibility. It's like a shoel. You're going to be chayv if it's stolen. You're going to be chayv if lightning strikes. You're going to be chayv at everything, even though technically you don't have to. You decided. You agreed. It's like a moshe when you rent a car. So technically, lefi din haTorah, you're a socher. So as a socher, you're chayv for certain things, but you're potter from other things. I'm afraid to read, but it says that rental contract. I have a feeling that what you sign on the rental contract goes way beyond Parshas Mishpatim. So how does that work? The Mishnah says, Master Shabbachim, you want to make a condition, you want to make it tonight, that you're going above and beyond the call of duty, gig is the date. So he asks the Gemara, the fourth of the Ramah comes, B'mai, how did that obligation take effect? B'dvarim, you just gave your word? So a guy promises, oh, leave the car in my house and I'm accepting responsibility for tip by lightning. And then a tip by lightning. So based on what? Because I said I'm going to pay you. How is that bonding based in? So Shmuel says, no. You made a kinyan. You made a kinyan chalipin. You didn't just agree to be chayav. You made a kinyan to that effect. So says Rabbi Elio, back to Riyah, you see from here, you can make a kinyan on obligations. So just as you can make a kinyan on obligating yourself to the higher degree of being a shoel, so too you can make yourself make a kinyan on the obligation of paying more than the ikar ha-ksuba as well. So Rabbi Elio just showed there's a precedent for this, but he didn't explain it yet. So why is this not a kinyan devar? What is the difference between Agabar that says that I can't make a kinyan that I'm going to split a field? That just doesn't, the words aren't tofes. I'm making a kinyan chalip and then I'm going to divide a field. What does that mean? That's a kinyan devar. So why is that any different than I'm making a kinyan chalipin that I will pay if and when it's hit by lightning? I'm making a kinyan devar, I will pay the sefes ksuba. So Rabbi Eliyahu continues. Let's go back now to the sixth of the Maamar Kavos. So the sign of Masa Shemachim is Kishon Baruch. So the Gemara asks, "So Baruch, b'may b'dvarim u'mishanim b'shikon miyado." Mashba b'kol inyan, afkish ein lamach l'shem nechassim. There's no mention of a mitzvah of any nechassim being niknu. El shem mishabe gufo lazachov me'ata. There are no nechassim, but you're being mishabed your guf to something. U'chashayiv no nechassim chal shibudo me'ata. Once you get nechassim, then the shibu will take effect. Ve'ein zekin in dvarim bi'alma. This is not kin in dvarim. So far, what Rabbi Eliyahu has explained to us is that I've shown you on the Shabbat down that you can make a kinyan on something that looks like it resembles kinyan devarim, but it's not. And I'll give you two examples. The Gemara would see about the Shoel and the Sugin Ksubas about getting married and adding on this Tosefes Ksuba. So what is the difference? How would you know, how would you recognize whether something is or is not kinyan devarim? So that's the loaded pause, the next two lines of Tosefes. We're going to have to put that on hold. I think the davening starts at 10 to, right? Okay, so hopefully that's up tomorrow. We have to keep suspense to try to figure out what is and what is not, what are the rules that govern when something is or is not a kid. Okay, that's up tomorrow.